Welcome back. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you as we talk a little bit about one of the contenders in the AFC. Always a tough matchup for your Kansas City Chiefs, and a little bit about how they have been built and how they've been a contender year after year after year. We turn to SI's football writer, Todd Karpovich, joins us here in the program. Todd, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate the time. And I'm curious, the Ravens and their approach to team building. I think this is a very integral moment for the Baltimore Ravens as you know, they, and you wrote about how, you know, how they've been putting their draft together, but they've got a big decision to make on Lamar Jackson. And they've been fantastic at maintaining and being a playoff caliber team virtually every single year, certainly being a contender to be a playoff team every year. But have they been a Super Bowl contender, even in the years that they were a number one seed, the way they're constructed and because of their quarterback, are they really a threat to be able to win at least three, if not four games against playoff caliber opponents? That's kind of what I'm interested in here. And I'm curious your thoughts. I know you wrote on how they've kind of looked at, you know, in some ways you would describe the way they draft as kind of Billy Bean Oakland A's, right? Trying to find the market efficiency, inefficiency, and exploit it. Have they been successful in their drafting approach, in your opinion?
They've done really well with their draft. They stick to that philosophy of best player available, and it sort of worked out for them. You know, this year I was surprised they picked 11 players to get all their draft picks. They had a fourth round pick, and they kept all. So the Ravens have been dressing well. They've taken the best player available. They've never deviated from that approach. And it has led to success on the field. But like you said, they haven't been to the AFC Championship game. They won the Super Bowl. They were number one seed, and they got bounced out of the playoffs again. So there was the criticism on Lamar Jackson was, can he win a playoff game? And he actually won one against the Tennessee Titans in 2021 season. But, you know, he dealt with an injury last year, and now you have his contract situation hanging over the team. Yeah, so the Ravens drafted well. Has that translated into a Super Bowl in recent years? No, it hasn't. So we'll see where it goes. They have solid depth, though, heading this year.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm sorry to interrupt you there. And that's why I make the comparison to the A's. The A's have been able to, and it's a little bit different in baseball, as we know, where there's no salary cap, and if you're a smaller market team, it's harder to compete. But what they've done is, until this year, either competed every year or said, okay, we're going to reset, never crashed hard, never lost 100 games. This is the first year they're headed towards that, but also never been able to really break through and make a push to win the World Series. And I'm curious if the view in Baltimore is that they do everything right except for what is the most important, right? That they've maybe captured the formula of regular season success at the cost of winning a championship. And to me, I would say no. The answer's been no, because it's hard to find the franchise quarterback. And that's such an important part. And most championships are won in the NFL by teams with what ultimately will show itself to be a franchise quarterback, but when they are in their first contract, right? Russell Wilson went to two Super Bowls, won only one, hasn't been back since he got paid. We're going to see if Patrick Mahomes can take the Chiefs back after getting paid. You know, they're there at that point with the Ravens. And I'm curious, I think they do a masterful job of building 52. Right, but can they get the number one right, or is that unfair for me to view it that way?
Well, the issue hasn't really been the draft pick and the players down the roster. The issue over the past couple of seasons is staying healthy. They had 25 guys on IR last year, which is they lost two of the starting running backs in training camp, the starting quarterback in training camp, Marcus Peters. So they were behind the eight ball right away. Of course, Ronnie Stanley, left tackle, played one game, he was out. So the Ravens were just decimated with injuries, and they still won eight games, which is amazing to me. They were number one seed in the AFC, at the quarter point of the season. And the previous year, they had 19 guys on COVID list, against the Steelers. They had the division first starters playing the game. So the issues with the Ravens have been their inability to stay healthy. They have trouble getting guys on the field. Coach John Harbaugh said this year, they're making a concentrated effort to change the way they practice, to change the way they do things, to look at training camp. They're not practicing with other teams during training camp, because last year a bunch of guys get hurt against Carolina. So they're changing the culture a little bit. Yeah, so the jury's out. We're able to stay healthy. And And, you know, like the NFL, sometimes the healthiest team is the last one standing at the end of the season.
Can they do it if they and they're going to see Lamar Jackson's number rise this year to $23 million against the cap, and they're talking about a long-term contract? Can they do it if Lamar Jackson is counting $40 million against the cap? I mean, does all of that work? Does their philosophy work if he's making that kind of payday?
That's the problem. I don't know if it does, because now you got all your money, so much money wrapped up one player. Do you have enough money to build around it? You know what I mean? You know, Tom Brady was a guy who was very generous with his contract and doing pretty friendly deals. So the Patriots could just sign players around him. Maybe in Tampa Bay. You know, Lamar Jackson, if he signs, you know, here's a $45 million contract, you know, are they going to be able to add all those pieces? That's the question. They're going to have to draft really well and add these young players. And then again, these rookies are going to have to make an immediate impact, which is what they're counting on this year. Kyle Hamilton, the safety, and Notre Dame, the 14th overall pick, has been stellar in OTAs and mandatory minicamp. He's a guy who come and start right away. Other first-round pick, Tyler Linderbaum, the center from Iowa, also going to start this year. So, yeah, if there are any guys that can make an impact, but, yeah, that's the question. That's the question. Can they win a championship? You know, Kansas City, you know, Patrick Mahomes, they got a huge contract. Are they going to be able to win again with that? That's the question.
They you pointed out that they are going after positions that are not considered like premiums, right? They take a center in the first round. They take a safety up in the top 15. And both these guys are expected to be very good players, but would they have been better packaging, you know, both those, picks to go get a top wide out? Would they have been better off in paying? Now listen, Orlando Brown's let's take aside his quest to play left tackle, which I want to ask you about here in a second, but you know, yeah, going ahead and saying, okay, well, we're not going to make you left tackle because we think Staley's better, but giving money to Orlando Brown to make sure that they're secure at both offensive tackles, or is their approach just built for winning the regular season games, and at some point you've got to take that leap of faith and go after, you know, the quote unquote most important positions, because they've also let guys like Za'Darius White go, on the edge, and they've been kind of famous for letting those guys go. Yeah, exactly. Is that a flaw? Is that a mistake in how they're building the team?
It could be. You know, the jury's out, because if they were in the Super Bowl, it answers all the questions. They don't. They look at the way they're doing things. The Ravens are going to get back to their 2019 offense, where they're going to pound the ball, they're going to run the ball, they're going to, you know, they got a quarterback who's dynamic and can fly out of the pocket. If they're running back, if J.K. Dobbins and Edwards come back healthy, they have one of the best 1-2 punches at running back. You know, so they're going to concentrate on throwing the clock, run the ball, and beating teams that way. Like, but again, you know, they don't have a Pro Bowl caliber wide receiver. They have Rashad Bateman. He's had a solid rookie year. He missed the first half of the season. He's going to be the number one guy this year. And then a bunch of guys who are, the jury's out. They don't have a whole lot of experience at wide receiver. You know, so are they able to win with that? And again, another question is their pass rush. You know, they really don't have a guy who's capable of having double digit sacks. David Njabo from Michigan, they took him the second round. He's got torn Achilles way back in November. So, you know, the future might be there with the pass rush. But again, that's a big question mark. So, are the Ravens a Super Bowl caliber team this year in 2022? I don't think so. I think they're going to fall short. I think they're a playoff caliber team, and I don't think they're capable of winning it all.
What happens with Lamar Jackson and his contract? How does this play out ultimately with the Ravens?
Well, that's the biggest question hanging over his franchise. Lamar Jackson confirmed at mandatory minicamp that they were talking again, which is good. The Ravens, you know, the key would have been the Josh Allen deal. Josh Allen signed that deal with Buffalo. You know, the Ravens could have scooped him with a similar deal with Jackson. We don't know if they did or not, but that was probably a fair deal. But now, you know, if he has another MVP caliber year, he could price himself out of it. You know, the Ravens they can franchise tag him next year and the year after, but they may want to do that. You know, and just playing on a fifth year option, that 1 year deal, is very dangerous. You know, if he throws that, if he gets hurt, it's going to hurt him. You know, what will they do with him, you know, the following year? He tears the Achilles, he tears an ACL, you know, early in the season. Will they deal with him with a 1 year deal? Or if he has a huge year, you know, MVP caliber year, when the Super Bowl, he's probably going to place himself out of Baltimore's comfort zone. Yeah, so if he it's not real. They were really, really in a precarious position with the Lamar Jackson contract situation. And they let it fester too long. They should have handled this, you know, last year, year before when he was younger, and they could have gotten a deal done. But now, you know, and of course, he doesn't have a formal agent, so it's very difficult to sit him down and talk to him about a contract because he does not have a representation where like a normal NFL player.
We're talking to Todd Karpovich, SI writer for Ravens writer for SI. If he's only on the 1 year deal, doesn't it make it easier to have that ground and pound approach, right? Like if I were a Ravens fan, my fear would be that, okay, they get a long-term deal done with him, and now they say, okay, we can't expose you to the hits, because I think what makes him dynamic is his ability to run the ball. But if they wrap up, you know, $150 million in him over multiple years with a big guarantee and, you know, a deal that you can't even begin to think about getting out from under for 3 years, that, you know, I would think that the organization would want to use him differently if they've got that money invested in him and say, hey, he's got to throw the ball. And in reality, what makes him special is him, you know, the ground and pound that you mentioned. You fear that?
Yeah, but they're also, you know, tag and trade is also on the table for next year. You know what I mean? You know, you get if they can't figure out how to sign him or they don't want to sign him, and they can trade him for 2 first-round picks or a bunch of draft picks, you know, they have to think about that. So, you know, the key is for him to stay healthy. So he's all our options open. But yeah, I know the Ravens, he actually bulked up this off season. He's up to He usually played about 208 pounds up to 220, which, you know, sort of help him take absorb some of those hits. But, you know, last year, you know, he got hurt, missed 4 games by the end of the year. He got hit in the pocket. He got a bone bruise in his ankle getting sacked. You know, he wasn't even running the football. So he's been able to avoid injuries running the ball. Most of his issues have happened when he's in the pocket. And again, the Ravens offensive line was not very good last year because of injuries. So it was just not a good situation all around.
I mentioned Orlando Brown. What is the view? What was the view of Orlando Brown as a Baltimore Raven?
Well, in retrospect, you know, hindsight being 2020 and the Ravens being truthful, I think, you know, they probably would have liked to sign Orlando Brown to the long-term deal and let Ryan Stanley go, because of Ryan Stanley's injury history and what's been going on with him. We don't even know if Ryan Stanley's going to be back this year. The hope is he's back, but he's missed, you know, most of the past few seasons, the ankle injury. And Brown was a guy who played well and left tackle when he was in there. But again, you know, the Ravens traded him. They got Madafi Owe, who's a solid young linebacker, a guy who can make an impact. He was an expensive rookie of the year running last year before he got hurt against injury issues. But he's supposed to come back stronger this year. Yeah, but I'm, you know, heart of hearts, the Ravens would like to get Orlando Brown. And especially last year, because he really, really would have played a key role for the team with their problems at tackle, because they when Stanley couldn't play 16 games, Andrew Pat McCurry, he did a good job, but and Villanueva really struggled on the right side, really, really struggled. And it hurt the team, and the offensive line breakdown really hurt the running attack and the passing attack. Yeah, so the Ravens went back to the drawing board this offseason to restock that offensive line. We'll see how it holds up, but yeah, Orlando Brown was a good for the Ravens last year.
It's funny you mentioned Villanueva, because that was a lot of people's cry here in Kansas City was, why are you trading the draft pick for Orlando Brown when you could just sign Villanueva? So the end result, who is now retired, Baltimore did not feel like they got great returns from, you know, I know the contract wasn't big. I'm not talking about dollar for production, but they did not have a top shelf tackle in Villanueva playing for them last year.
No, we saw it right away in training camp. He was slow. He's older. He's beat up. You know, he's a guy who played a long time in the league. You know, with the Steelers, the Pittsburgh Steelers did not have a great offensive line last year. They didn't have a lot of depth, and he let him go. That was sort of telling about, you know, what he had left in the tank, and he really struggled here in Baltimore.
Yeah, that's interesting. What was the you know, I know what our view was here in Kansas City as Orlando Brown arrived, and his talk of his want to play left tackle, and we knew that was a spot that was open for the Chiefs after Eric Fisher got hurt and the Chiefs walked away from him. You know, and so, listen, it was better than what the Chiefs had. Again, there was a debate. Was there a guy you could draft with the draft pick that they gave away? And I know it was a package of picks, but the first-round pick going, was there a guy that, you know, the fans or the team, most importantly, thought that they could draft instead of making the move for Orlando Brown? And nobody was really set that there was going to be a guy down at that point in the draft and in last year's draft that could do that. So it was like, okay, you know, Orlando Brown, not sure what he is as a left tackle, but he's better than what else the Chiefs can get. But he had this, he came in and immediately talked about this desire and want and goal to play left tackle and, you know, to make his father proud because that's what his father had always wanted. Was that left tackle talk a big deal in Baltimore? And was there a feeling that, you know, hey, if you give him enough money, he'll play right tackle? Or was it that, look, it's left tackle or bust and they're committed to Stanley, and there's no way we can make this work?
That was it. He wanted to play left tackle. Ryan Stanley was a guy that Ravens took, you know, early first-round pick from their game, and they weren't going to part with him, and that was it. I mean, Orlando Brown said, either I'm playing left tackle or trading. That's the way it's going to work. You know, he might have held out of camp. Yeah, so it was all about left tackle, and him moving over to left tackle position. And, you know, the Chiefs got what they got, Nick Bolton, with that trade, who had a great year, you know, for them. So, you know, I think all in all, the Chiefs probably got a better end of the deal with that trade, you know, just ahead of the Ravens. The Ravens got OA and then Cleveland. They traded all the picks to Arizona. They had another late round pick, you know, Sean Wade, who never played again, he never played snap with the Ravens. So they traded. Yeah. So at the end of the day, I think Chiefs got better end of the deal. And yeah, it was all about left tackle for Brown and Baltimore.
I'm curious, another former Chief that's there with the Baltimore Ravens, Marcus Peters. I know what the feeling was here in Kansas City. It was, for most fans, good riddance because he'd been a pretty disruptive player, you know, a lot of things, just kind of, you know, nothing, you know, no criminal charges or anything like that. But whether it was, you know, taking his socks off, leaving the field in a game and, you know, that he thought was over and then running out without his socks on, being belligerent in the locker room when cameras were rolling and everything, there was a general consensus. I mean, it was quite clear on you didn't have to be on the super inside of the Chiefs to know that they were kind of fed up with his crap. Two stops later, he gets to Baltimore after going to the Rams. And he was, by the way, he was a brilliant player, although would gamble and get beat sometimes, but created a ton of big plays. What's the view of what Marcus Peters is as he sits with the Baltimore Ravens now?
He brings a really good edge to the Ravens secondary. They really missed him last year. And you remember Marcus, you know, when the Ravens played the Titans in November season 2021, the Titans all gathered on the half field, the Ravens logo at half field, and sort of like congregating there and sort of walking on it. And John Harbaugh came out and confronted them, and there was sort of like an exchange. And, you know, the Titans wound up winning the game. In the playoff game, on the rematch in the playoff game, Marcus Peters had that key interception, and he jumped on the Titans logo after the play. Got out of personal conduct, but it sort of really said it really endeared him to the Baltimore fans. You know, he would do that. He would have that memory. He had that edge to him. You know, and he's a tour to the player. You know, he's so edgy. You know, he goes. You know, him and Jalen Ramsey have a history. He went after him in that Rams game. He's a feisty guy. He's edgy, but I think he's matured a little bit where he doesn't have that same petulance. But he gives the Ravens defense a nice edge. He's a competitor. He's a good player. And the Ravens sorely missed him last year. He's supposed to come back healthy this year. He's on the final year of his deal, so the Ravens have to make a big decision on him.
For the first time in a long time, the Chiefs aren't going to be playing the Ravens in the regular season, and the Ravens don't have to take a bite of a first-place schedule. This year, what are the expectations for the Baltimore Ravens this year? Are they back in the playoffs? Are they a Super Bowl contender? What's the view in Baltimore?
Oh, yeah, the view in the Baltimore, they're a 10-11 win team in the playoffs. The team now, the big rivalry now is the Bengals, you know, of course, to Burrow and the offense they have going. They threw the Ravens out last year and actually the second game ran up the score. So there's a measure, and the Ravens are expected to be healthy this year. There's 25 guys back from IR to play close to 17 games. And we signed Clay Campbell. Yeah, but our expectation is the Ravens are a playoff team. They'll compete to win the NFC North, and then they'll see what they can do in the playoffs.
Time for our final four here with Todd. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, an official healthcare provider of Kansas Athletics, together with LMH Health. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System can see you quickly. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Todd, I'll start you with this one. Crab cakes, are they the best or are they overrated?
The best. I eat crab cakes at least once a week. I'm born and bred in Baltimore. So I have an affinity. Crab cakes, number one.
Okay. Is Lamar Jackson a Hall of Famer when his career is over?
No, he's not.
Okay. That says a lot.
He's going to fall short.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you and Baltimore miss Buck Showalter?
Yes, very much so. He'll be still with the Mets. He's a whiz. The Orioles, though, I do cover the Orioles for the Associated Press part-time. And, yeah, the Orioles are a fun team. They got some young guys coming up. And, they had their first winning month in June since 2017. So, yeah, the Orioles think they're turning the corner. They could be competitive. But, yeah, we missed Buck. Buck was a great quote.
All right. And, finally, is Lamar Jackson a Baltimore Raven in 2025?
Yes. Yes, I think so. I think we eventually get a deal done, but we'll see how long-term effective they are.
Todd Karpovich, SI, we really appreciate the time. Thanks so much for spending some of it with us, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you on down the road.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, the Jazz, end of the hour answer. And this is an odd question, but there's a reason for it.
Is the reason because you're an odd guy?
Yes, that's at least part of the reason. Other part of the reason is last night the New York Yankees had had a player reach on catcher's interference twice in the same inning. And a friend's like, how does that happen? So I actually looked up Baseball Reference. Their Play Index actually has a batting event finder where you can figure out how many times that's happened in a game. Actually happens more commonly than I would have imagined. I can count on one hand the times I can remember even ever seeing it, but apparently it happens fairly frequently.
What, catcher interference?
Yeah.
You haven't watched enough sixth grade girl softball.
That's probably true. But in the major leagues, I don't remember any specific incident of it happening, but apparently it happens quite a bit.
You've never seen catcher's interference?
I think
interference?
I've seen it, but I can't say, yeah, I remember this one time so-and-so did it. I don't remember any particular instance. Yeah,
it's not exactly.
It doesn't jump out, right?
Usually doesn't happen Game 7 of the World Series. Okay.
The last time it happened twice in the same inning was just 2 years ago, and it was the Yankees also against the Orioles. So I got to look and to see.
So Yankees
who
is the answer.
No. Who the leaders are. The question is, who is the Royals' career leader in reaching on catcher's interference? The all-time leader is Jacoby Ellsbury, who had 31, including 12 in 1999. He reached on catcher's interference 12 times. Although there's a guy for the Reds who already has 6 this year. So he's on pace to break that record. Pete Rose is second at 29. I think the third most in career is 19. But who's the Royals' career leader in catcher's interference?
My assumption, since there are guys that seem to have more of those, is it's guys who set up really deep in the box.
Yeah, I would think.
Right? That are just all the way at the back. Who was it who they used to come out there and all the guys before him would kick out the back of the box before he got there so he could step? It was a big power hitter.
The first guy I ever saw something do like that was Frank White.
Was it Tony Bautista? I mean, he stayed in the very back and had that weird little stance.
Yeah, but I was thinking there was even somebody, because I remember a manager, I want to say, did Frank Thomas do it?
That's what I said. Could Frank White. Frank Thomas is what I meant for the White Sox.
Okay. Yeah,
because I was at a Royals White Sox game, and my dad annoyingly pointed it out to me that he was doing that.
And I think I remember, like, managers would go out there and would challenge, and the umpire would get out, and they'd measure it. They'd come redo the box, and Frank Thomas would immediately start kicking out the line. And the guys in front of him, part of their job was to start kicking out that back line. So that Frank could step even further back. But
there's a clip of George Brett saying, the further you stay back, the longer you have to see the pitch. The longer you have to see the pitch, the better you are at hitting it. The better you are at hitting it, and the end thing was, and the more you do that, the more money you make. It was like 5 steps from staying in the back of the batter's box and making a lot
of
money.
So is it George Brett?
It is not.
Okay. So somebody, what's the number?
11.
Let me try Danny Tartable. I can see him being back there. Mike McFarlane was great at getting hit. How about Mac?
Mike is tied for second with 3.
Wow.
Somebody has 11, and he wasn't a Royal very long.
So he was way back there.
Yep. Alex Gordon and Mike McFarlane are tied for second with 3. This guy has 11.
Oh, man. Now I'm kind of intrigued by this question.
He's been a Royal within the last 5 years.
Oh, within the last 5 years. And he had 11?
He was a Royal last year. But is no longer a Royal.
There's no way it's Soler.
Jorge Soler.
Wow.
has reached on catcher's interference 11 times in his career. The second most in franchise history is 3.
But you say the record is Jacoby Ellsbury?
31.
Does he have the single season record too?
As far back as I went, he did. I went back to somewhere in the 80s, and I got bored with it. And his 12 was the most.
Jacoby Ellsbury.
Nick somebody for the Reds has 6 already, and he's on pace to break that. It's just a weird little stat. There's really no rhyme or reason other than what you pointed out, guys who set up.
Well, I don't even know.
And you'd think you'd have to get a good number of at-bats, but Jorge Soler is the all-time leader at 11, and he didn't play 4 full seasons here, did he?
I wonder if it – I mean, I'm just trying to think. I mean, trying to think of swings, and I'm not good enough.
You know, Pete Rose stood way back
and back on that back leg.
Yeah, that choppy almost, swing. Yeah. And he played 8 million at bats, so
that makes sense.
But Jacoby Ellsbury?
Yeah, that is.
I could not find the names I was seeing pop up. There's no rhyme or reason to who they were.
I'd be interested to see. Did he have a catcher in the division that was notorious for committing that?
I don't know.
Like he would have matched up with several times over his career.
It's possible.
Yeah, like is there a guy who's a reacher?
Yeah, right.
Is reaching out there all the time? Is it more about being in the division with a bad catcher?
But you'd think that there'd be
the guy would have to be a good hitting catcher because if he's doing that all the time,
right.
And he's a no hit guy, you'd get his ass out of there.
But you think there'd be somebody? I have to look from 17 to 21 in American League and see. Did all the guys with the big numbers come from the AL Central? And if not, then it's just a weird ass little stat that has a lot of variance. And if you
and goofy things happen.
But the Yankees had two of those last night and a hit by pitch.
I mean, it does make sense. The Yankees have been analytically driven, and they spent a bunch of money to get Ellsbury away from the Red Sox.
Yeah.
So. For him to do nothing after his first year. Trust me, I know.
You try. Because
every year I tried to push that turd uphill and think he was going to bounce back to being the player he was with the Red Sox, and it never happened. Never happened.
You have a long list. If you had written down every time you had referenced that, the amount of turds you've tried to push uphill.
There's a lot of big hills and lots of turds. Yep.
The turds I pushed by Seren Petro. Yeah.
There it is.
Forward by Adam Gravett.
It's mostly been in baseball. I've remained pretty good in the NBA at fantasy. I've remained good, pretty good in NFL at fantasy. I don't have the stomach to weather a Reds Marlins clash. So it literally the rest of baseball, I literally do fantasy baseball now for this job.
Now, am I correct in hearing that you're a purist when it comes to it? You'll do rotisserie only. You don't do the week-to-week stuff in fantasy baseball?
I just never have. It's not that I look down my nose at that. I mean, I'm sure there's a good way to do it. But, no, I've always done the rotisserie categories, the traditional. Well, we switch from batting average to on-base percentage. But, there's so many guys in base. Like, I used to have the extra innings. I should own 5% of DirecTV I had Sunday ticket, extra innings, full court, center ice, game day, college football, and because they used to, we didn't have a million sports channels. And so if you want to see all the college football games, you had to have, there was a Sunday ticket for college football, and I had it for college basketball. I had 6 premium sports packages. Now, not asking anyone to shed a tear, I wrote it off, so you get whatever 20% back or whatever off your taxes or whatnot. But then I was like, I'm never watching these games. What am I doing? Football and basketball went away on its own. They quit offering it because every game's on now, right? Between the Big Ten Network and all the now ESPN Plus streaming and all that, they're all on. But baseball, I was like, I have not watched a game in 6 weeks. Why am I paying for this thing?
I always tell people your little rant about people and claiming they're college basketball fans. That's how I explain myself as a baseball fan. Where I'll say I'm not a baseball fan. I'm a Royals fan.
Right. Right.
I'll watch, and I am, and I truly am a college basketball fan. Like, I'll watch Purdue, Michigan State. Like, I really enjoy college basketball. With baseball, I watch the Royals and I watch the postseason. I'm not watching the Tigers and Yankees on Sunday night in the middle of July. So I've never been like that.
By the way, quick sidebar. Did Thunderlips walk?
I think he did. Did
to
he
the, go to the convenience store?
He just decided. He wrestling people along the way.
I guess.
Any comers.
I'm not. We haven't heard sirens. Like, there wasn't an altercation over there. Okay. So. Sidebar. I'm like,
he doesn't just
walk
across
kid?
The street, right? He didn't go to the one, you know.
Didn't you have an intern once that you sent him for lunch and
yes.
you called and he, where are you?
We sent him.
I'm up by the stadiums.
Yeah, he had gone, like, well, it's the only one I know. He literally went
to the one he was by where he lived.
Yeah, by where he lived. And I was like, no, there's one right there.
That's a failing grade sign.
Yeah, there's one right there.
By the way, 2017 to 2021, the leader in catcher interference is a guy.
As a catcher.
No, as a batter. As a batter. Just to see, like, maybe he played in
what,
the same.
When to win?
17 to 21, the years that Soler was a Royal.
Okay.
Tommy La Stella, who's played in four of the six divisions, but not the NL, the AL Central.
So it's not catcher.
It's not him.
It's not catcher.
Jorge Soler has 13. Josh Reddick has 13, who primarily played in the NL or AL West.
By the way, that is Curtis Siebelt in a nutshell.
Yes.
Question asked, can't let it go, begins the stat head search immediately to get to the bottom of it. I love it. We're playing for great person. Cajun food from Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Get that great Cajun food at three locations, I-70 and 291, out at the Legends by the racetrack, and, of course, the original 39th and State Line. Great Cajun food, great live music, great people. That is Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. I encourage you to go down. Love the catfish bites. Great appetizer on my list. I'm a huge fan. Everything is great. Made from scratch menu, big menu, lots of things for everybody in the family. It's one of the few places we can go with my little one, and she's happy with what she orders. Mom and dad get lots of choices. My wife always likes to get something different. Never a shortage of great, great meals at Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Find them online at jazzkitchen.com. I want to talk a little football here as we were just talking about how the Ravens go about doing things with Todd Karpovich. By the way, it's important to put that R in the right place
because
I put it in the wrong spot. That's why double take there. not Krapovich, Karpovich. Important safety
his name
tip.
Actually, was that you'd be like, just change it, dude.
Yeah.
The Ravens play-by-play guy noted after this isn't necessarily
spelled
but
first
anyway, but he said, I'm really happy my parents named me Jerry Sandusky with a G, not a J.
Yeah. That's not enough of a separator.
No,
book.
I agree. But
he has to
I would just flat
way.
Change it.
Yeah. My brother's name was spelled with a G. They pronounced it Gary. I just want to say I'm Gary.
And I would say that
or just change the entire name. Bill Jones here.
Based on that interview, Todd earned his name being Carp, not crap. I think he did a very good job.
I think he did too. I enjoyed talking to him.
Yeah.
Todd Karpovich with us talking about the Ravens.
And
go ahead.
I got enough pushback with the proper information that I guess altered my take on this a little bit since the NFL draft. But I said, it was on the Saturday after the third day, and I was like, every year, all I hear from people in the know, well, man, the Ravens just get the draft. Man, the Ravens just get the draft. And I'm like, then why haven't they won a playoff game in 10 years?
Well, and that's what I was getting
at. Or been to a conference championship game in 10 years. And,
right.
And everyone said, it's because they can't find the quarterback.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, what good is acing the draft if you're missing –
Well,
that's
where I think, you know, I the difference, you know, like when we – like this time of year for NFL football, and we can talk about this with Timmy here in a little bit, is all about the lists and the rankings. You know, Chiefs were 14th in the PFF secondary rankings. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't have a running back in the top 20. You know, it's what we do this time of year, and I enjoy it all. I'm not knocking the people who write those things. But, like, you look at it, and the Chiefs aren't – coming up top five in anything, right? Yet they're the second or third favorite to win the Super Bowl, right? Like, most of this is just motion, right? There's a difference between motion and progress.
Yeah.
Somebody famous guy said it at lunch today. I don't know who it was, but anyway.
Nobody I've heard of.
It was our server.
No. It was Shannon? Asher.
Asher.
Asher was Asher. Our server, yeah.
Yeah. Over at Hereford House, by the way. Great lunch today. Thank you.
So good.
Curtis had three steaks. You don't usually see that kind of performance at a lunchtime.
I actually had to slow down. I thought, wow, I'm blown to this thing way too quickly.
Yeah.
That old lady whose lunch you just stole right in front of her because you were sick of waiting, that was...
I just reached over with a fork.
Kind of embarrassing, man.
Grabbed the steak off her plate. I'll take this.
I had the, I can't remember what it was, is it the 1957, the salad with the two dressings? So good. Love those dressings. And a little steak soup. So just, there it is. There's our menu from our friends over at Hereford House. But I, you know, the point being that if the Ravens, like, and I can't get anybody from Baltimore, and I think this town was like that too, but every time we talk to anybody, whether it's Glenn Clark or anybody else, right, they win all these best drafting, best cap management, all this, and not winning a championship, and yet they have a dilemma as to whether or not they should sign, or no dilemma. They're all convinced that they should sign Lamar Jackson.
Yes.
And suck up a lot of the cap space that has allowed them to be the best cap manager and make all these draft picks and everything. They want to then constrict their ability to do the things they do well with a guy that has yet to prove that he can take him on into the playoffs.
And the year they broke through with Harbaugh to win a world championship, Flacco, it wasn't like a 2000 Ravens situation or 02 Bucks. Flacco in the long term had never played an MVP caliber, but for those playoffs, he played. He went like 11-1
on a rookie contract.
Exactly. And he happened to play for those 4 weeks at an MVP caliber level.
And to their credit, they have been about let's just get to the tournament enough times and eventually it'll break our way, which I don't think the Ravens should be trivialized, right, for doing that. That's not a bad strategy if you acknowledge if your conclusion is the quarterback's a crapshoot and we're not playing craps and we'd rather just have a solid team, win 10-11 games every year, be in the playoffs every year, have our fans believing it can happen every year, and just take our one championship every 20 years, right? If that's the approach, okay. But like, if you want to win, if you want to be a dynasty, if you want to win consistently, you got to get the quarterback spot right. To me, and I go back to what we you know, I give great credit to the Chiefs, who threw as now, and to what I remember saying to Brett Beach, like, hey, you guys gave up a lot to go get this guy, and he said, if we're right, no one will ever remember what the hell we traded for him. And how many people in Kansas City, let alone nationally, can remember what that deal was? They know there was a first going to the Bills. They probably remember there was two firsts. That's about it. I think there was also a third. If I'm not mistaken, there was another pick in there. I think it was from 27-10. But the Ravens, you know, went with the guy in the 32nd. And I give him credit. Like, I would probably franchise him next year. If he won't play, then trade him and move on. Because I don't think you're going to win running the ball. You need him healthy after 17 regular season games. You need him to stay healthy for four more in all likelihood, because you're probably not going to win enough to have the one bye week. So you're going to need him to run the football for 21 games. And I get everyone in Baltimore's like, well, he got hurt in the pocket. Okay, the one that sent him out, yes, but he got banged up numerous times during the year. Every Chiefs game we see him leave the field limping and headed out for a little bit, and then he comes back. One time he didn't. They finished the game with RG3 out there. The legendary game with the 4th-and-17 or 4th-and-15 conversion, he wasn't on the field at the end. RG3 was on the field at the end. So I think the one thing that we should appreciate here in Kansas City is I think the Chiefs identify the premium spots and are willing to overpay for the premium spots and count on their ability to find the diamonds in the rough for the mortar, right? They overpay for the bricks to build the foundation. They overpaid in their trade to go get Patrick Mahomes. It paid off in spades. They overpaid. Now, it doesn't always work, but they overpaid to get Frank Clark because they felt like they needed an upgrade over Dee Ford. He was enough of an upgrade to finish the team off and win a championship. They overpaid for Orlando Brown. They're going to overpay him against the cap to have a quality left tackle. I'm not going to say a great one, I'm not sure how he made the Pro Bowl, but I didn't watch the other 15 starting left tackles week in, week out in the AFC, so maybe he deserved it. But I can tell you, I don't think he's any better than Eric Fisher was in his prime, and maybe not as good, because I don't think he's as good a pass protector as Eric Fisher was. He's a better run blocker, but he's not as good a pass protector. But he's better than, you know, having, I don't even remember, who the hell was 78 who started there in the Super Bowl? He's here 2 years, played right tackle mostly, then had to move over on the left. Remember the one-year, $1 million guy?
Yeah.
Two back-to-back years? I can't remember his name.
Not 78.
Yeah, he was 78.
That would have been.
It's already, I'll look up a depth chart from 2 years ago, but somebody hit me up on Twitter, at SorenPetro, S-O-R-E-N-P-E-T-R-O, with that. He was just here.
What, he wore 78? Mm-hmm. Bobby Bell's number?
Oh, maybe I'm wrong.
That's something. You're thinking 77, maybe?
No, that's
79?
70. If I'm wrong, it's 76. I think he wore 78. I'm still going to stand with it.
While you're looking that up, let me, since the Ravens, by the way, not only have the Ravens not won a championship since they won it 10 years ago, they haven't been in the conference championship game.
75, I was wrong. Mike Remmers. Yeah.
Ravens haven't been in the conference championship game since they won the Super Bowl and have won just two playoff games. 20 different franchises have been in a conference championship game since the Ravens were last in it, including the Titans, the Jaguars, the Vikings. I mean, the list of teams that have been in that game, but not the Ravens. And the teams that hadn't been in it in years
They have the perfect regular season formula. They beat up on – they're better depth-wise, and they beat up on all the teams that are crappy. They win all those games. They're really well coached. They have good analytics. They put up a hell of a fight and probably go 500 against the good teams. That gets them into the tournament, but then it's only good teams. And they play 500 ball in there, which usually takes you out in either round one or round two.
If you just said in 2012, both the Bengals and Bills will be in a conference championship game before the Ravens get back, you would have been laughed out of the room. But they both have, and why? They got stud quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
They got that situation right, and the Ravens are still kind of tiptoeing around whether or not they did yet.
The Ravens also don't go out and spend on wideouts. I mean, there are pieces that they, you know, the expensive positions they don't spend at. They go and get the best at the non-expensive positions. So they're the best guard-to-guard team, although they did spend on Stanley, the left tackle, who's been hurt for 2 years. But they're not spending on pass rushers. They drafted a safety, you know, with their first-round pick this year. I mean, that to me is kind of the Chiefs, even though they're later on, took a corner, premium position, took a defensive end, premium position. Last year, first-round pick, didn't have a guy playing a premium position that they thought was worthy of being picked in the first round, so they traded it and got Orlando Brown, premium position, left tackle.
Yep.
I mean, there is a good formula. But I think there is, that all being said, I think that's, you know, one of the problems. I think the Ravens would probably be better off getting the premium positions around Lamar Jackson and have a better shot. But I do think there's something to be said about how the Ravens always hold their water.
Yeah, because you can do that while still having a – you can do what the Ravens do really well in the draft and have a great quarterback.
Yeah, and I think –
and the Chiefs should be able to take from what they've done the last 4 or 5 years and add that to the guy they already have.
What I wonder is, because they paid for Chris Jones, premium pass rusher, they paid for the left tackle. What I wonder is, would they – be better, would the Chiefs be better off with that Ravens approach around Patrick Mahomes?
Yes.
And I think we saw them, or is ideal, sometimes it's the Chiefs approach, sometimes it's the Ravens approach, and it's knowing when to shift gears. I would have shifted gears 2 years ago, they shifted gears this year, but this year's draft was definitely a Ravens-like draft, with the exception of moving up for McDuffie. They wouldn't have moved up for McDuffie.
No.
They would have taken whatever corner was there.
They would have taken the Elam kid if he was there, because whoever was in that spot probably would have taken McDuffie.
So, like, right now I'm pretty intrigued and I'm pretty pleased as a Chiefs fan, and I'm intrigued and I think optimistic as a guy who tries to analyze this stuff that the Chiefs have shifted gears within the acceptable window. I think it's a little bit later. Again, I would have done it right after they won the first championship. But said, okay, we immediately go into the 5-year mode every year. Every year we're about being as good as we can, you know, our four-year mode since only the first-round pick are 5 years. We're in what we want to do is do everything we can to be as good as we can 4 years from now. And every decision will be made based upon that. I don't think they did that the last 2 years, but I think they did it this year. And that may prove to be there are times to go for it and there are times to play the long game. And we'll see if it culminates. This is a year that the Chiefs, this is the Bills going into the year, to quote Eric Eager, this is the Bills championship to lose. They're the favorite right now. So they're supposed to win. And are they built right? They've poured everything into it resource-wise. Are they built right, or does somebody steal their championship?
I love that. It's one of my favorite. He has a lot of great references and theories, more or less, because he's a scientist, and he should. That might be my favorite.
That one and the fake trophies.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of the fake trophies because that explains, you know, like we've talked about it with the Royals, quoting, we're the first organization to have six guys from the same draft class start a game for the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to lose 100 games. Fake trophy. Like starting it or winning it? Are you the first one to have how many win it? How about the first one to have winning records? Quantity of starting pitchers from the same draft class with winning records, with ERAs significantly below league average. Because that's what matters.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody, you can grab anybody from A-ball and start them. But did they pitch well? Right? I think the fake trophy one's one of my favorites for sure. 913-3810-810. You're in the program. You're listening to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're going to talk Chiefs football with Tim Grunhard, talk some college football as well. Grunny, as they call him, coming up in our next hour. By the way, I'll give you an update, a little Wimbledon first round
Wimbledon action.
I'm not sure what this, you might Google Tan, what her first name is. Serena Williams, in her first-round match, lost the first set 5-7, dominated the second set 6-1, although there was like a 15-minute game two where she broke serve on Tan to get control. She wins the second set 6-1, but is down now 4-3. 3-4 it is right now from Serena's perspective, and a 30-30 game that she is serving to draw even in the third and deciding set right now. So
Harmony Tan.
Harmony Tan.
Of France.
Of France. Is giving Serena Williams all she wants, and Serena Williams trying to tie Margaret Court yet again.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a thing, she's now beyond the limits of anybody who won multiple Grand Slams, the gap that they've had. If she wins another one, she's at like 5 years plus, like Arthur Ashe had the record at like 4.5, 5 years. She's much older. Arthur Ashe, when he won that one, was 31 years old. She's 40 now. One behind Margaret Court, two to pass her. And Wimbledon, probably her best chance to do it. And she is laboring, to say the least, to get through this set, up 40-30. So we'll keep you up to date on that. But there's a lot of optimism that having taken the time off, she was going to be fresh and get things done. She looks exhausted by my measurement out there. Even if she survives this, it does not look like she's going to be hoisting the plate, the Wimbledon plate.
Did I see, was it yesterday or over the weekend, that Novak Djokovic became the first player to win 80 matches?
80 matches in all four Grand Slams. Yeah. So, and as he advanced, and he looked pretty good advancing. But, okay, she held serve 4-4 in the deciding set, so we'll keep an eye on that. Grunhard, you know, is a big-time tennis player. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, yeah.
Big time tennis player. I hear the only complaint about his tennis game is that he likes to wear the short shorts.
Yeah, it's a little.
And then you put the tennis balls in there as well. Mm-hmm. Really starts to bunch up.
Yeah,
you know, I've heard that's kind of a thing
at
the country club.
Eyes being shielded, mm-hmm. especially mm-hmm. when he plays doubles.
Yeah,
partner, not a fan.
Did you just see Grunhard lumbering around the tennis court?
That would be funny.
It's the only thing funnier would be me or you lumbering around the tennis court.
All right, John Elway, 62 today. Against what team did old Horseface have his best record? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.